Well, on this special podcast, I'm joined by the president of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, Cardinal Peter Turkson from Cape Coast, Ghana. Good morning, Your Eminence.
Good morning.
Justice and peace, they're two extremely big words. What exactly do we mean in a Catholic context by justice and peace?
No, you know, the Holy Father in Rome, in his administration of the Universal Church, is assisted by so very many other, if you want, called ministries and groups. Some come as congregations. And after the Second Vatican Council, the need was felt to supplement these other groups or congregations with some other offices which represent the Church's engagement in the world. So, deriving from the encyclical Gaudium et Spes of the Second Vatican Council, the Office of the Justice and Peace is just an office set up to respond to the exigency of the Church, of the Church's message being an experience of joy and an offer of hope to the world. So the setup Justice and Peace basically is an office meant to carry on the implementation of this, you know, of this message, that the Church has a message of joy and also a message of hope to a world that is very much in need of having this other, you know, wider vision, you know, towards life, wider vision towards society. So with the setup of that office, it's been engaged with basically, essentially making, inviting humanity, principally Christians, but also all of goodwill, to see from the Christians, to see how they can encounter, bring their Christian faith and their charity or love of Christ into every situation in life that they get involved in. And that is the thing that, you know, our office, you know, just follows up, try to facilitate for the Church all over the world.
And what challenges are you facing now in contemporary society?
Oh, the basic challenge that we face, one, within the Church, with our own self, is the challenge of reception, the challenge of ensuring that, you know, the good works that we do, studies, research, or even sometimes in Pope's, some of the papal statements and documents, arrive at the level of the faithful, arrive down there. And that's why we recognize that we have great need of the setup of on the level of local churches, justice and peace commissions, okay, and hopefully also on the parish levels. So this effectively become our feet on the ground, so that when these are properly set up and set in place, whatever studies or research or whatever statement come up, you know, we know where to send them, in the hope that, you know, when we send them through these channels, they'll get a knowledge of it, because that's where the faith has to be lived. It's not lived in our offices there in Rome. It's lived on the parish, you know, level, and that's where the message needs to get. So that's one of the greatest challenge. The other challenge with regard to our work in the world is about the need to recognize the impact of globalization. If something is good, you know, happily it spreads very fast. But also if something is a challenge or something is not too good, that spreads equally as fast. Okay, and that's where, you know, one of the biggest challenges is to be located. So how we can rein in globalization, humanize it, evangelize it even in the process, and make it actually advance the integral human development of the person.
I looked at one of your recent speeches, the Bishop Dunn Memorial Lecture up in Durham, and I thought one of the key points that you made was that we need to become builders of an earthly city which anticipates the heavenly city of God. Mm. That's very profoundly put, but you talked about the networks, and we have many in this country. Mm. How exactly do we do that? How do we empower people to take that forward?
Essentially, that quote is a quote from the encyclical Caritas in Veritate. So it's a quote, you know, I borrowed it from the Holy Father. No, it's not my own. Yes, but that's basically to recognize that Christianity and our life on earth has a vision. Okay, has a vision. Maybe transcendental, but there is a vision. There is a direction which should direct and guide everything that we do. The point of that vision is this heavenly city. Okay, that's the point of direction. And we here on earth, with everything that we do, if these are inspired by the love of God and justice, we hope to gradually also create on earth or facilitate on earth the development of experiences for, you know, the human person, which closer and closer approximate the values, you know, of God's kingdom, or what we refer to as the city of God. So how do we do that? Well, we do that first and foremost by making the basic principle of the social doctrine of the church known, and that is basically the gospel of Jesus. Okay, that is a basic evangel. That's 11. Okay, if anything in society, in the lives of men, and so, you know, in structured society, to be made to cooperate or participate or, you know, anticipate anything of the kingdom, it's first and foremost because these have been exposed to the gospel of Jesus and challenged, okay, to adopt a new form of expression, a new way of living, reflecting the values, okay, of the gospel. That's how we do it now. If any organization embraces this basic principle or basic, you know, way of life, then we hope that at the end, all of them inspired by the same principle can also, you know, put together their efforts. Somebody may be following events like in the Middle East. Some other organization may be following development in Africa. Some other organization may be following this in Latin America. So these are different companies, but at a certain point, all of them inspired by the ultimate desire to see the human person develop integrally can at a certain point also converge. So yes, we may be separated and, you know, differentiated by the focuses and the objectives that we aim after, but at the end of the day, we can also come together because we're inspired by basically the same principle.
And you also talk about the need to cooperate irrespective of our own religious faith, or none, of course. There are many groups of people that can be very useful that don't share our religious feelings, I suppose. Let's talk a little bit about the financial side of things, the economic downturn and the sort of wreckage of that to a certain extent. One thing that I did notice that you pointed out was that you made a very strong point that economic resources do exist that could help wipe the tears from the eyes of those who suffer injustice, who lack the basics of a dignified life, and who are in danger from any deterioration in the climate. Very strong point there. Mm. How do you get people on board that maybe don't share our faith view with that?
Yeah, that's always been the greatest challenge of any preaching of the gospel, even from the time of Jesus. At a certain point, you preach the gospel, you offer it insistently in the hope that somebody ultimately will cut the virus and be able to come to share this point of view. It cannot be against, you know, the existence in the world of resources to be able to do all of this is not absent. The world is not without such resources. It's a question of priorities. You know, what we say, identify as our priorities and, you know, the most important things. I mean, if our priority is defense and investing so much in the development of weaponry and all of that, that's a priority that you set. And you wouldn't want to reduce the budget, its budget in any way, because that's for you is a big thing. If on the other hand, for example, immigration into Europe is a big thing, why can we not also decide to help people improve where they are so the need to move out or to emigrate It's not realized. We know why people are migrating. We know that everybody is moving in search of better conditions of life and all of that. So if it's a concern receiving all of them here, because you cannot, there is a limit to how much Britain can assume as population. There's a limit to how much Italy or Germany, there's a limit to how much all of these countries can, you know, take up. So how about investing also in those countries, you know, out there, out of which these people come? It's a question of establishing priorities, deciding what we want to do. You know, so as I said, we're not without the means. It's a question of identifying what are our priorities and what we consider most important. If we wanted to stop, you know, emigration and migration into these countries, which cause problem, in the case of Italy, for example, if you arrive there without papers, the latest law they passed means you can be thrown into, you know, prison as a clandestine, as having arrived there without proper documentation, visas and all. So how come we cannot also invest in those countries out there so that the desire to move out is kind of curtailed, reduced and diminished? You know, so that would be in the interest of all of us.
Well, let's turn our attention to Africa, and it's not a continent we can talk of without actually being a bit more specific than that. Obviously, North Africa is very much in the spotlight at the moment. Mm-hmm. Equally so, Sudan, and what looks like a cessation in Sudan that will probably be ratified, I suppose. The eyes of the world are on Africa, aren't they, in many ways? But then you look at something like the Millennium Development Goals, and 2015 did seem a long way in the future to me at one point. Now I'm thinking we're getting a bit closer. Are they useful? Will they achieve anything? And then talking about your point about migration, are they the best focus for us?
Yes, no, certainly the Millennium Development would achieve something. It's already achieved something, if even it's very modest. Some difference has been achieved, some improvements and whatever type. But just that, the full objective set, you know, probably may not be achieved. It depends on whether countries which promise whatever sums of monies and contributions are still, you know, stick with those promises, or at one point or the other, you know, feel that they need to curtail it. Britain stayed with us, 0.7% of of its GDP going into this. So, can it be achieved? Yes, I think one. Basically, issues now are politics and political. If even it takes Zimbabwe, it's still political. Ivory Coast, you know, it's political. So all of it is political, you know, most of that political upheavals. They may be economically motivated or related to economics, but we cannot rule out other factors like ethnicity, you know, and stuff like that. So, yes, Africa is very much in the picture, but I think at the end of the day, if we're able still, with our traditional development partners, to shift emphasis to help, you know, all of this Africa develop, shift them gradually from simply, you know, giving aid to investing. Okay, if aid, yes, but, you know, not to make aid the big thing, but begin to shift focus a little bit from aid to investment, then we would be seeing some change. That, for me, I think that investment is the one thing that is needed to catapult several African countries to a new economic orbit. We leave the present forms of poverty and everything else. And there are examples to show everywhere where, you know, some kind of investments have been introduced, whether microfinance or whatever system. It's introduced discernible and decent appreciable changes in the lives of people. So that's what I would suggest. The case in North Africa, at a certain point, it's also there. I mean, the fight in Libya, whatever type of, it's just at the end, you know, that the wealth of the nation is for a long time been accumulated, you know, in the hands of a few, you know, reigning dynasts and whatever, and people feeling that they've been cheated for too long. So the desire for economic, so the fight appears to be political, but it's economically motivated.
Is that not part of the problem in a sense, and by no means all countries, but a handful of countries do have leaders or dictatorships, that it would be quite easy for countries that are able to invest, where they'll turn around and say, oh, well, we're not happy dealing with that leader or that regime. That's a problem, isn't it?
We, you know, okay, so it's like we have an interesting proverb in my part of Ghana that says, while you're advising the cat not to, you know, go after a piece of meat or fish, and then you also got to advise that piece of fish not to stay in the way of the cat. So that you advise both sides. This is true. It is true what you say, but yes, it is true. The economic situation, thing needs to be improved upon in the West, whatever. So one, why is it not possible then to have a governments in the West who think that they must always deal with governments in those countries to consider the alternative of dealing with faith-based groups who have a track record of realizing and implementing, you know, projects for the good of the people. Why can that modification not be introduced into whatever the constitutional principles, you know, which guide distribution of some of these aids or whatever investment or whatever? So that kind of shift will be of great value. All over, particularly in Africa, faith-based groups have track record of success, implementation of projects, and improvement of people's, you know, lifestyle and conditions of life. So if, you know, funding agencies or funding countries which support and aid development would just diversify their portfolios a bit and not just limit everything to governments, but also include. I'm not asking for governments to be abandoned completely, but to widen, you know, that receptacle a little bit and include faith-based organizations.
His Eminence Cardinal Peter Turkson there, President of the Vatican's Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. For all the very latest from the Catholic Church in England and Wales, visit www.catholicchurch.org.uk.